This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Pretty interesting stuff we think we've got for you this week. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jack, all the way from Maine. How are things on your side of the world?
They are just fine. I am on the West Coast, ensconced somewhere near Los Angeles, California, in an undisclosed location. Actually, it's in the South Bay here, pretty close to Los Angeles International Airport. And come by for cake and coffee when you'd like, all you listeners. And it's enjoyable here, and I think you're approaching fall there in Maine, are you not?
I am. I'm in the mid-coast Maine area, about 5 miles off of the ocean, and we are starting to see some bright yellow and orange leaves very slowly creeping their way in. So any moment now, fall will explode.
Yeah. Well, it's much prettier there than here in Southern California, although I have some leaves falling in my yard here. In fact, they started in August, which I don't quite understand, but I think there's some, I don't know what it has to do with daylight, sunlight, the autumnal equinox and all that stuff, which we have just approached and passed. Our special guest is Seth Valentine of Buick. He is going to talk to us about the all-new Buick Encore GX because he is an absolute expert in that, having been along for the development and a key player in the development and marketing of the Buick Encore GX. Which is not to be confused, of course, with the Buick Encore. So don't confuse that, Chris. Please don't. Don't confuse it. I'm confused enough, so don't make it any worse for me. In the car review segment, we'll be talking about the Lincoln Aviator and the Volvo XC60 T8 Polestar. Zooty. Yellow seatbelts and all. Yellow seatbelts and you know, other yellow accoutrements. So you should be jealous because it was a lot of fun to drive. Before we do any of that, though, here is some of the latest automotive news from around the globe, which is exactly what we promised you. So tell us about some news. Give me some news, would you?
Yeah, there's it's a couple years down the road now, but Hyundai has started teasing its new Tucson SUV. It's quite a popular model for the company, and I like what they've done in recent years. They've made it, their vehicles look a little bit, they're on the bold side, especially if you've seen the new Sonata. The current Tucson is more kind of out there, if you will, than something from Toyota or Honda. But this new model, the new 2022 Tucson, is very much very new, very curvy. It's got some, angular curves, if that's even such a thing. It looks a little bit like the Lamborghini Urus with all of its straight lines and dimensions, but a very good looking vehicle, expected to start showing up late next year, and we'll see where it goes from there, but a very neat looking vehicle.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see that, and that will be interesting. I think we talked with you last week a little bit about Ford Motor Company and what they're doing with F-150, and they're, you know, really jazzed about launching the new 2021 Ford F-150. Of course, it is the franchise, I think, for Ford Motor Company. They have a new theme called Built for America, which highlights Ford's commitment to building in America, to actually manufacturing vehicles in America, and strengthening the country's manufacturing base. And they announced some figures, and I thought this was pretty interesting, so I thought I would share this with all of you. They did a study, actually the Boston Consulting Group did a study about F-Series and its impact upon America. And it turns out that that pickup truck is a major driver of employment. One of the things their study found was up to 14 American jobs are supported by each direct Ford F-Series employee. So that's about 500,000 total jobs in the United States that are derived from F-Series, from Ford F-Series. Ford Motor Company supports more than 1 million American jobs, and more than 2 million full-size pickup trucks were assembled in the U.S. last year, and Ford assembled nearly half of them. So that's pretty amazing. In terms of contribution to total gross domestic product, which both of us are economics majors, so we talk about that all the time on the show, but that is about $50 billion, the contribution of F-Series. Here's one that a factoid that I found fascinating. The F-Series franchise, F-Series trucks, generate more revenue than major companies like McDonald's, Nike, Coca-Cola, Visa, and Netflix. That's a mind blower, right? I mean, it's a pickup truck, but it's bigger than McDonald's.
Yeah, I think the jobs thing is probably what's most impressive to me. But if you think about all the suppliers and the parts and the things that have to be moved around and created before the truck even hits the road, it makes sense.
Yeah. Pretty interesting stuff. Kia wants to change the way it does business or the way it's perceived. And it has a really ambitious plan to be a battery electric vehicle or BEV manufacturer. It wants a quarter of its global sales to be battery electrics within 10 years. So that's kind of amazing in and of itself. I mean, that is a major change for being perceived, at least here in the United States, as a value brand into something much more like Tesla or at least leading edge as an electric vehicle brand. Kia has sold already more than 100,000 BEVs worldwide since starting selling electric vehicles way back in 2011. So, and they're looking for, as I say, 25% of their worldwide sales to be battery electrics by 2029. And they actually will introduce 7 different battery electric vehicles before 2027.
Good for them. And they've done a good job with a couple of the recent ones that they've released so far. So the Kia Niro EV is, I found it great. It's a zippy little car with a good range. I think it's around a 240-mile range. So more power to them, I guess, literally in
yeah,
this case.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, yeah. And they also plan to do some things with infrastructure. They're going to have charging stations, of course, at all their dealerships in the United States. And it wouldn't surprise me. In fact, I would be shocked if Hyundai, kind of their sister brand, their sister brand and owner brand, didn't also participate in this. I think their plans are a little less radical, but they want to capture, Hyundai, that is, wants to capture 10% of the global EV market by 2025.
That's ambitious.
I think it's very ambitious, so we'll see how they fare. I think a lot of things will be interesting, and I think also what will be interesting is what we will talk about in the next segment. Well, we will be doing road tests of the Lincoln Aviator and of the Volvo XC60, their crossover sport utility. We had a very zooty, sporty version of that vehicle. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad, and thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you. It is road test time right here on America on the Road. We live to drive, and we've got some, I think, interesting vehicles, fascinating vehicles, vehicles worth talking about for you. Chris, you were driving the Lincoln Aviator. Tell us about it.
I was. So the Lincoln Aviator is one step down from the Navigator, I believe. So it's quite a large SUV. It's a three-row vehicle. I was testing the 2020 model, which is all new. This is the Grand Touring model that I tested. Has a twin-turbo 3.0-liter V6 that is paired with a 13.6 kilowatt-hour battery pack. And all that together produces 494 horsepower and get this, 630 pound-feet of torque. Through a 10-speed automatic transmission. And while it is extremely powerful and makes the vehicle literally roar back like a speedboat, the combination of the hybrid system and the 10-speed transmission is a little clunky. The handoff between the battery and electric motor and then the twin-turbo V6, there's some times where the engine ends up roaring into action. And it's not frightening, but it's not quite as smooth as you'd expect from a Lincoln. That said, the vehicle is extremely, supremely, over-the-top comfortable inside and it's beautiful outside. The 30-way power adjustable seats were heated and cooled with a massage function. Almost every portion of the seat can be individually controlled either through the infotainment screen or buttons on the door panel, as well as the massage functions and all that come through the infotainment as well. It's got Ford or Lincoln Sync 3, so it comes with navigation, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, a variety of controls for the vehicle and interior lighting, ambient lighting, that sort of thing, all from within the infotainment system. Second row captain's chairs, which are also heated, and independent, very nice independent climate controls for the second row. My children were acres apart from each other in the vehicle, so there were no stray hands flying across to cause a conflict. And as I said, the third row, and in this case, it's an actual usable third row. So it's not too short. It's not too tall. It's just right, as one of our favorite fairy tale characters would say. And even with it up, there's plenty of room for groceries and a couple of carry-on size suitcases as we test it out. So it's big, it's expensive, but it's wickedly comfortable. And, you know, I think that even with a little bit of clunkiness, the hybrid is probably the one to have. The fuel economy was great, and the APA estimated range was around 460 miles on a tank. I think I got 425. Still very impressive for such a large vehicle. So liked it quite a bit.
Right. I like the vehicle, too. I like the way it looks. I like the way that Lincoln has been able to separate it from the Ford Explorer, which essentially it is in many ways. They've done just a great job of differentiating, and I think that's smart and great for the consumer. I mean, you don't look at the Aviator and go, oh, that's an Explorer with Lincoln badges on it. You go, this is a good-looking premium SUV. The fact that it is based on that same platform, there's certainly nothing wrong with that, because we absolutely love the Explorer platform, or at least I like it a lot. I think they've done a good job with it. So I think they really have done a nice job. I think Lincoln is really kind of finding itself over the last several years, you know, finding that niche of American luxury that is differentiated. And I think they're really starting to show their heels to Cadillac. I think the most recent Lincoln vehicles I've seen, their executions are better than the Cadillacs. What's your take on that?
I agree. I think that the Lincoln, especially in the smaller models, so like the Nautilus and the Corsair, compete really strongly against Cadillac's, the XT6 and so on. And they feel like a more cohesive package. You know, they do pull, and you mentioned the brand of American luxury. And I actually wrote this about the Aviator. It's just, it's kind of that old school, big, soft American luxury, but they've been able to wrap that and do that in a package that is comfortable and performs well on the road today. So I think they've done a really good job.
Right. Well, I like it a lot, and I think it's worth taking a look at. So that's the Lincoln Aviator. And interestingly, as you were speaking, Chris, I had to note the similarities between what you were talking about when you're talking about the Aviator and what I'm going to talk about with the Volvo XC60. Because the vehicle I had was a T8, which is a hybrid. And it is a massively complicated kind of hybrid, and I'm glad I'm not a technician who has to work on it, because it is both turbocharged and supercharged, and then has a hybrid situation as well, so a lot going on there. This is the vehicle I drove was the Polestar version of that, and Polestar is essentially like AMG is to Mercedes-Benz, or they would like you to believe that. Anyway, it's their high-performance version. Whether the world is ready for a bunch of high-performance Volvos is, I guess, up to the world to decide. It's not up to us. But in this vehicle, they start with a 2-liter four-cylinder engine that is used across the Volvo line. They turbocharge it and they supercharge it, and there's good reasons to do both. And then they throw in a battery pack and a hybrid system, and the result is 415 horsepower and 494 pound-feet of torque. So this is a runner. This is a car that really can get out of its own way very, very well, and is also kind of tarted up to show that off. It has things like yellow brake calipers, or orange or gold, depending on how you want to phrase that, and yellow seat belts, which kind of freaked out my wife. I remember the first car that we had when I was a kid that had seat belts. I think they were actually an add-on, and they were yellow. You know, the seat belts were yellow, just to, I guess, for caution or something, or so you'd see them. They certainly didn't match the interior of this old Chevy that we had, but they have that going on. And this is a very enjoyable vehicle to drive. It probably doesn't match the German sport SUVs in the whole performance realm, but it certainly is right there with them. And the XC60 has been a mainstay of Volvo for a long, long time. It's a very handy size. It's based on the same platform as the larger XC90, so it has good stuff inside. Its interior treatments are probably a little bit more upscale because of the association with the XC90. So this is a vehicle that's very enjoyable all the way around, and in Polestar trim, it's pretty sporty.
I agree about the XC60 overall. I think, you know, it's I on a personal level have always loved Volvo's interiors, especially the newest ones. They're simple, but they're so elegant. And I haven't driven the one that you drove with the Rube Goldberg contraption under the hood, but previous models both drove and handled very well. So I can only imagine the extra power serves it very nicely.
And, you know, you'd use turbocharging for high speed. You use supercharging to get, you know, off-the-line grunt. Of course, off-the-line acceleration, you'd get that with electric motors as well. So a lot to like about this powertrain. Plenty of range. Great-looking interior. I should have mentioned the seats, because my wife practically melted as she sat in the front seat. She absolutely loves the seats in the Volvo. I think they're probably the best in the industry, and have been for a long time. So there's really not much not to like about the XC60. Maybe the Polestar trim is a little over the top for your average driver, or even average Volvo driver, but I think there's a place for it. And there's certainly a place for the XC60 out there among the premium compact SUVs.
I totally agree.
And that's it for the vehicles we were taking a look at. I think both keepers. We certainly wouldn't turn them down. Very, very cool crossover SUVs. When we come back, we will be taking your listener questions, or at least one of them, maybe more. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad back with you. Thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you. And with Chris Teague, we are about to take your listener questions. We live for that. We live to help you out with information that we have gleaned from covering the auto industry for as many years as we've been doing this. And if you'd like to reach us, you can send an inquiry to editor@drivingtoday.com. That's editor@drivingtoday.com. And we will answer your listener question in an upcoming show. We pretty much promise that. So we'd love to hear from you. And Chris, I have a question for you from a listener. And it asks you to predict the future, which I know you're really good at. In fact, I think you majored at predicting the future in college, did you not?
Yes, actually I did, but I failed miserably and still can
do so. Okay, well, I'm hoping you'll be able to predict the future, at least in this case. And here's the question. Will we see self-driving vehicles on the road by 2025?
No. I don't think we will. And the longer answer to that is, you know, despite all the things that we're hearing from people like Elon Musk with Tesla Autopilot and, you know, all the big promises that we hear from tech companies, there's a lot of infrastructure needed in the physical space. So around the roads and in communities, there's a lot of legislation that needs to happen to standardize the industry, because right now there are 50 different standards for 50 different states, and that's just untenable for an automaker to try to make anything that works in all those situations safely and effectively. And then there's a consumer education and trust factor in there as well. So how much do consumers, the uneducated or the kind of public at large, how comfortable are they going to be to get in a vehicle without a steering wheel or a brake pedal or a gas pedal and let a computer that they can't necessarily interact with drive them down the road? So I think that's going to be a big step for a lot of people. And then, you know, government moves at its own speed, sometimes backwards and sometimes not at all. So it could be a while before that moves forward as well. What I think is more likely is sort of geo-fenced, so operating in a small area or a small defined area, city buses, taxi cabs, public transit, those things that can perform repetitive routes that are relatively uncomplicated, and they move, you know, people from one place to another and over short distances. So I think that's probably much more likely. In fact, they're already, you know, those have already been in testing for a while now. I think that we're going to see, it'll be at least a decade or more before we see anything resembling a self-driving car.
Yeah, I really have to wonder about the consumer desire for one. I mean, there's a lot of desire, I think, in the industry. There's a lot of desire among the engineering community to do self-driving. I'm not seeing any kind of real groundswell of support for self-driving cars among the general public. And certainly because this technology at first will be pretty expensive, you'd have to believe that there would be some consumer application for this to get into regular passenger cars like you and I drive. For different vehicles, for say delivery vehicles or large over-the-road semi-trucks or those kind of things, I think that's a whole different story and a different level of investment, different level of commitment. But for a typical passenger vehicle to be self-driving and have all that technology that requires, and again, as you say, with the infrastructure that requires, I think it's a big stretch to believe that's going to happen very soon.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people actually still want to drive. It's not just us crusty old guys that love, you know, shifting gears on a Saturday morning. So I think that I'd be perfectly happy with a self-driving city bus, although Maine doesn't really have any public transit out where I live to speak of. But, you know, if I were in an urban setting, I'd be fine with a self-driving bus.
And I love the fact that you're describing yourself as a crusty old guy, because you're pretty far from that. I'm much closer to that. In fact, I'm probably way beyond that than you are. But it's nice of you to kind of join our team, the old guy team. I appreciate that.
I'll commiserate for now.
Yes, there you go. Well, wait till you get old, because it's not for the squeamish, let me tell you. But when we come back, we will be doing our interview with Seth Valentine. He's with Buick. Was intimately involved in the development of the Encore GX, their small crossover. So we will talk with him about that at some length. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad. Thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you. We have a special guest with us. Seth Valentine is the program engineering manager for the Buick Encore GX. First, Seth, thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, Jack, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. I'm glad things are going well. They're near the Milford Proving Grounds, where I've spent so many happy hours, and you know, you certainly have spent many more hours than I have there. Tell our listeners a bit about the Encore GX. It might be, even the Encore name might be a little bit new to them, but certainly the GX suffix is. Tell them about it.
Sure. Thanks, Jack. So the Encore is Buick's best-selling nameplate. We've had it in the market for a few years, but this Encore GX is all new. It's a completely new vehicle from the ground up. We launched it in January of this year. Short model year for model year 20, and we're just now changing over to the model year 21 vehicle, and it's doing very well in the market for us so far.
Put it in context with you. Let us know, or let our listeners know, some of the vehicles it might compete with, you know, about how big it is, all of that stuff.
Yeah, small SUV. So it's a little bit bigger than the previous Encore, a little bit longer, 3 inches longer, a little bit wider. So key competitors are going to be CX-3, HR-V, Honda, some of the small Jeeps, quite competitive segment. You know, there's a lot of people in this space. We see a shift in the consumers going from sedans to small SUVs, and there's a lot of choices out there for the consumer.
Right, and it does not supplant the Encore, correct? It's in addition to the Encore, is that right?
Correct, it's in addition to. So the biggest differentiator is we're bringing a lot of technology. We're seeing customers wanting all those safety technologies, driver assistance technologies, this is a great platform that brings those technologies to a very affordable price point. So if you think just a few years ago, you really had to go into the luxury segment or up level, spend a lot of money if you wanted these advanced features. And now we're able to bring that to a very affordable price point for the mass market. And that's really one of the things that sets the Encore GX off from the competition, mm-hmm. with the amount of technology you get.
Give us, again, a little more context about what kind of costs we're talking about, what kind of pricing we're talking about.
Sure. So you can get it well-equipped in the upper 20s. Starting price in the mid-20s, and if you put everything on it, all-wheel drive, the giant panoramic sunroof, 360 cameras, rear camera mirrors, everything up, you're going to be in the low 30.
Got it. So very affordable. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of people want that taller profile. They want the utility of an SUV. At the same time, they're never going to go off-road. They don't have any aspiration to go off-road. But at the same time, they want something that will help them in inclement weather. I guess Encore GX kind of matches all those, checks all those boxes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. So you've got front-wheel drive with a CVT or the selectable all-wheel drive with a 9-speed transmission. Through our development, we had a lot of fun with the vehicle. Like you said, it's not an off-road vehicle, but we did spend a lot of time out west on the back roads, getting it muddy, up north in the snow. So it's still very capable, and it really works for your lifestyle. And with all those technologies you've got in the vehicle, the amount of standard features, we mentioned a few of them, lane keep assist, automatic emergency braking, front pedestrian braking, forward collision alert, IntelliBeam headlamps, teen driver, and then all of the optional features you can get that really come in to help the driver. And they're real, not gimmicky features, but they're real features you can use. I'll give you a couple examples. You have a 360 display camera, which is kind of that top-down viewing camera. We saw that, again, in the higher market vehicles, it's really come down into an affordable vehicle. And it's kind of funny, I was listening to your podcast from a week or so ago where you were talking about teen drivers. And technology that is easy to use, you know, really resonates with everybody, from those inexperienced teen drivers all the way up to the veteran drivers. I've got a teenager as well. This past January, he turned 16. Of course, growing up in a car family in Southeast Michigan, he had to have his license the day that he turned 16. So he said, I want to go take this test. Hey, Dad, can I borrow the Encore GX? The 360 camera is going to make my driver's test a cinch. So, sure enough, he rolls up. They let him use the 360 camera. You can imagine how easy it makes things like parallel parking and precision.
Yeah, I mean, parallel parking, obviously, the major bugaboo for anybody taking the driver's test. I mean, I'm a long way removed from my driver's test, but that was always the one that people would trip up on if they flunked their driver's test. Happily, I passed first time around.
Yeah,
I absolutely get what you're talking about. And, it's a bird's eye view from above the vehicle telling you pretty much what's all around you, right? So it makes it easier.
Yeah, everything all around you, exactly right. The only technology they wouldn't let him use on the test was the automatic parking assist. We also offer automatic parking for either straight in or pillow parking with braking. They wouldn't let him use that. But everything else, all the technology was available. And again, it's simple, easy to use things that you see coming down in price point. Another great example is the adaptive cruise control. It wasn't too long ago that if you wanted a good quality adaptive cruise control, you really had to have a radar-based system. And that required us to put radar units behind the grille, in the fascia, a lot of complexity, a lot of material costs that you just couldn't justify. In this price point, if it was $2,000 or more worth of material, it really wouldn't make sense. In this price point. Now with the great advances in cameras, we can use that single forward-looking camera to do all those functions. So we're really benefiting from the technology movement towards autonomous driving, and these cameras are getting so much better, you're able to get a smooth, great response. And I think that's also on your vehicle that you're driving. So I don't know if you've had experiences with that yet, but we've been really happy and pleased with the response we're getting there.
I think a lot of our listeners are still uncertain. They might have heard the term adaptive cruise control, but they're uncertain what it is. Could you describe that for them?
Sure. So the camera looks out the front of the vehicle. On your steering wheel, you have three settings that are gap settings. So you can pick how far behind a vehicle you want to remain And it's in time, it's not distance. So at low speeds, it's going to let you get a little closer, just like you would do in your normal driving. At highway speeds, it's going to increase that distance because, again, it's based on following time. And the camera simply looks out, and if you are having a set speed, say at 70 miles per hour, and you're cruising along steady state down the highway at 70 miles per hour, and you come up on a slow car doing, say, 65, the vehicle will detect that car and then slowly reduce your speed to match that vehicle's speed. The car automatically knows you're going to want to pass, so as soon as you press your blinker, it starts to accelerate. You pull out next to the vehicle you're going to pass, it resumes 70 miles per hour or whatever your set speed was, and you continue on your way. So it really reduces driver fatigue, and it increases safety, so you're not going to run right up on people and get surprised.
Right, and as you described, it's available in a vehicle that would probably cost right around $30,000, I think, equipped that way. Am I right there?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a great time. The customer's really winning. We mentioned there's so many vehicles in this competitive set that if you really want to win, like we do with the Encore GX, you've got to offer those features.
Right. We're talking with Seth Valentine. He is the program engineering manager on the Buick Encore GX. And we thank him so much for being with us. We're talking a lot about features, and we haven't said word one about powertrain. Why don't you give us a little sense of the powertrains here that are available in the GX?
Absolutely. They provide a great driving experience. We have three different powertrain options. Two different engines and two different transmissions, working out to three combinations. So the entry-level price point, you get a 1.2-liter with a CVT and front-wheel drive. The higher-volume engine is the 1.3-liter. That's the all-in technology engine. I'll say a couple words about that as well. And you can get that one in a front-wheel drive or an all-wheel drive. One of my favorite things about this 1.3-liter engine, which is, again, our high-volume engine, is the incredibly flat torque curve. The torque is that feeling of responsiveness when you're driving the vehicle. And all the way down at 1600 RPM, you get peak torque with that engine. So very, very low engine speed, meaning you don't have to get into the accelerator, wait for the engine to spool up for the vehicle to really respond. You get that off the line punch, or if you're doing a U-turn in traffic, you get that instant response. And we do that with a lot of new innovative technologies because it sounds like a small displacement, 1.3 liter. But it drives and it feels like a much larger engine. Excellent fuel economy, 0 to 60 in about 8 seconds. And we've put in technologies to both optimize the performance as well as the fuel economy, such as active thermal management. Sounds like a big word, but basically what we're doing is optimizing the temperature of each component in the engine to its ideal state. Not every part of an engine wants to be at the exact same temperature. So we regulate the coolant flow all throughout the engine and the different components to get exactly the right temperatures. So rapid startup, you get better cabin heating, and you get better fuel economy out of that and lower emissions. The engines are turbocharged. We have monoscroll turbos that spool up very, very quickly with electronic wastegates. And what that allows us to do, we talked about that torque at 1600 RPM is very, very low. We maintain that absolutely peak torque. It's a flat torque curve. There's no arc to it. Absolutely flat torque curve all the way out to over 4,000 RPM. And we can do that by controlling our boost levels. You have electric oil pumps. You have e-boost brake systems. So we're reducing all the parasitic drag and parasitic losses, you know, things that put drag on an engine that don't really contribute to vehicle movement, that just reduce your fuel economy or increase your emissions, and you don't get the feeling of a performance benefit out of it. So we've really looked at this engine top to bottom, all in on technology, and that's how we get such a great driving engine and get a very clean burning engine and great fuel economy at the same time.
Right. I think some people and maybe some Buick buyers might scratch their head a little bit and go, turbocharging, is that something I want? Based on turbocharging of two or three decades ago, right, when turbocharging was all about performance, it was very peaky. There were certainly some reliability issues attached to turbocharging back in the day as I was entering this business. That's all changed very radically, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. You know, we've come a long way. Turbo technology has gotten better. Obviously, validation and durability requirements and what we expect out of our vehicles as we go through that validation process and hundreds of thousands of miles that we put on them and expect them. It's come a long way. So the technologies we see in the powertrain, the turbo you mentioned, CVTs, you know, things that maybe had a negative connotation in the past, you really got to give the new ones a look. It's not a 1985 anymore.
Right. You talk a little bit about continuously variable transmission, CVTs. Tell us how that's changed and how that has gotten better.
Sure. So the internal technology, just durability, you know, looking at all the different failure modes you can get out of a CVT. We've gone through every single one of them. This CVT is an in-house developed transmission. And I was fortunate to have the opportunity to do some small limited production runs even before we put this vehicle, which was the largest first use for this transmission, into production. We had some fleet customers and opportunities for me to get several thousand vehicles on the road for several years and really dial in the calibrations and then also the durability. When you drive a CVT transmission at low speeds, it's direct ratioing. So it's giving you basically an infinite number of ratios to match the performance of the vehicle for the speed that you're at. So you're not stepping through gears like you would in a traditional transmission. And then at high speeds, say when you get over 80, 90% throttle, you want to accelerate, it goes exactly to peak horsepower, and then you get some simulated shifts just to give you a better driving feel above 90% pedal. But it really gives you the optimal performance for whatever you're looking for, whether it's acceleration response or fuel economy.
Yeah, and certainly it has aided fuel economy for a lot of manufacturers, and I'm certain you expect it to do that in the Encore GX. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about interior and more specifically infotainment and connectivity. Tell us a bit about that in GX. It seems so important.
It is very important, and that's something the customers are really looking for. You know, we led the way back in 2016, 2017 with having Apple CarPlay, Android Auto standard. Of course, you still have that. Now for the 21 model year, you get wireless Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, which is a great feature. When you combine that with a wireless charger in the vehicle, it just declutters your interior. No more cords stretched out. No more USB cables that get worn and have intermittent connections to your phone. Just a really nice, seamless execution. You also now have Amazon Alexa. We've partnered with them, and it really ties your connected home experience to your vehicle. So for several years, you've been able to use your Alexa to talk to your car and you know, tell it to remote start your car or things. Now you can reverse that in the vehicle and talk to your smart home, you know, and say, Alexa, set the thermostat to 68 degrees. So it really goes both ways. It's super simple to pair. You have your choice of the voice assistants. You know, if you don't like Alexa, of course, Siri or Google Voice Assistant, just a press away on the steering wheel. Bluetooth pairing, you can have multiple devices set up at once. One of my favorite ways to do it is have my phone paired for incoming and outgoing calls. But I use my kids' phones because they have the Spotify Premium for the music. So you can have multiple devices at the same time interacting with each other, which is a great benefit. And then, of course, you have the marketplace and all the apps that are coming in. In this strange world of COVID, if you want contactless service, you know, whether it's gas, pizza, parking, it's all just a click away in your app store.
Yeah, I want all of that. I must be hungry here in the studio. Pizza suddenly sounds pretty, exactly. pretty good to me. I wish I had an app here in my studio that I could... You know, I guess I do, kind of. It's called a telephone.
right.
But there you go. What is the most exciting to you portion of the Encore GX? You know, what about the vehicle you think this is the home run? We really nailed it right here.
Yeah, we talked about the technology in the vehicle. So I really appreciate that. Obviously, I've been driving them for several years. You know, we get a sneak peek and we're driving vehicles several years out into the future. And it's something you really grow to love as it fits with your lifestyle. I also really appreciate the flexibility and how the vehicle fits our lifestyle. We have, you know, two teenagers. This is the primary vehicle that I drive. The amount of storage in the vehicle, even though it's a smaller footprint of vehicle, one of the surprise and delight features that relates to how you can use it is the front passenger seat will fold flat. So if you're out running errands and it turns out you found a great deal on an area rug or you need to pick up some 2x6s, you can fold that second row seat down flat, obviously. Most all SUVs do that. But this one, you can fold that front passenger seat down so you can slide those long items in and close the tailgate fine. We have a gentleman on the team here that works with us that loves to go kayaking in the Huron River. And rather than having to strap it to the roof rack and bungee cord it down and deal with all of that, he can just simply fold that flat front seat down, slide his little kayak in, close the lift gate, and away he goes. So great, great flexibility and functionality out of it.
Yeah, and it's terrific that he doesn't have a friend to take with him, or he takes the friend in the passenger seat right behind him if he's going.
Yeah, exactly. So you still have a couple of seats. So
right.
you can still bring at least one friend along with you when you have all the other seats folded down. We've also added for the GX a power liftgate. Again, that's something you see typically in the larger, more expensive SUVs. But we heard from our customers that either they might be a little vertically challenged, or people that just have a lot of things in their hands coming out of the grocery store. They love having that foot-activated liftgate with the logo projection, or being able to open and close the liftgate while they stay in their vehicle, have someone load their groceries in the car for them, and then they can just close the liftgate without having to climb out. So you're starting to see a lot of these technology and convenience features, again, coming down into a very affordable price point.
Right. What are some things, Seth, that are distinctly Buick about the Encore GX? You can point to that and say, you know, this makes it a Buick.
Yeah, Buicks are known for quiet. So when you're in a Buick, it's going to be a comfortable, relaxing, peaceful place to be. You're not going to have a harsh, beating road noise. And part of that is you get active noise cancellation standard, all trim levels. It's not something you have to option up for on the Buick Encore GX. You get A and C on every single one. You also have an air ionizer helping keep that cabin air fresh. Again, just giving you that level of Buick refinement, comfort, and quietness.
Well, is the vehicle in Buick dealers now, or is it soon to arrive in Buick dealers? How can our listeners get a look at the new Encore
Absolutely.
GX?
Yeah, it's one of the fastest selling vehicles in the industry right now. I think it's in the top 10, last I looked. So we do have model year 20s on dealer showrooms. And we have 21s on the way. So we're right in the middle of that changeover. So there's some great ones out there, some good deals. And they should be able to find one if they're going to look for it. So I'd encourage everybody to go take it for a test drive. You know, put it on the consideration list. And I think it'll surprise you when you see what it has to offer.
Absolutely. I'm driving one right now. I'm very, very impressed with it. And at the price point, an exceptional bargain, I think. So that's my take on it. That's my quick quick road test and review. With us has been Seth Valentine. He is the program engineering manager for the Buick Encore GX. Thanks so much for being with us, Seth.
My pleasure. Anytime, Jack.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Seth Valentine of Buick, talking about the new Buick Encore GX. Luxury in a small package. I've driven one recently, and we'll talk about that in an upcoming show. And our thanks to Seth for being with us. And I also have to thank Chris Teague, our co-host extraordinaire, for being with us. Thanks so much for being with us again, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me again, Jack. And thanks, everybody, for listening to me ramble for a few moments. But I will say, if you enjoyed what you heard, you enjoyed our show, please leave us a review and hit the subscribe button. It'll help us continue to grow and reach more people as we go forward.
And if you like what we do here on America on the Road, which is not apparently talk very well, you might actually like the book I've written called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It's something we try to practice here on the show and in our daily lives. And I think if you like the show, you would also like The GR Factor. So look for that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, everywhere that books are sold. I would appreciate that. And again, my appreciation to Chris Teague for being with us. And to you for listening to us. Thanks so much for being with us. This is Jack Neared along with Chris Teague saying, join us again next time right here on America on the Road.